ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between. It's the Tom Ragu Sit Down Comedy Show, the place where comedians come to chat about current events, pop culture, and every comedian's favorite subject, themselves. And now, here's your host, Tom Ragu.
Oh, we're on. Okay, so I love my theme music. Do you love my theme music? All right, so I want to introduce my guest for today. Before we get started and before I even talk, because I'm so excited to welcome the Greek goddess of comedy, Ellen Karras, for the second. Oh, she's still doing the theme music.
I love it.
It's over.
So, any opportunity I get to do this, I take advantage of.
Well, then you should have been on the MTV Awards about a month ago, because somebody was doing a lot of that and a lot of this.
Oh, yeah? Who was that?
Miley Cyrus had that whole twerking thing going on.
Oh, the twerking.
This is upper twerking.
Oh.
This is working.
You know what? I was distracted by her tongue hanging, you know, out of her mouth down to the floor.
And not also a healthy tongue.
The dry humping of Robin Thicke, who I think is old enough to be her father at the very least, or an uncle.
Not a healthy tongue, by the way.
Oh, disgusting.
It's a very strange color, the tongue.
You
know, the trick is that if you're a performer...
What kind of TV do you have? How did you see the color of the tongue?
It's a super HD plasma.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I notice these things. I notice the color of the tongue. I notice dirt under the fingernails.
Oh, dirt. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
And so what you do, if you're a performer, is you have a red lifesaver so that your tongue has this artificial red color, and then you have a healthy-looking tongue.
Look at you.
Now, no, she doesn't have any gay friends that care about her.
Right.
To tell her this very important information?
I think that she's too busy hanging out with people that dress up as stuffed animals is really what I think her problem is.
Okay. So welcome to the Tom Ragu Sit Down Comedy Show. My name is Tom Ragu. And let's just call a thing a thing, okay? And let's just start right from the beginning.
Okay.
And that is that I've learned some lessons from the last episode. Now, the last episode, episode one, I had the pleasure of talking with Robin Fox.
Mm-hmm, very funny.
And there was a lot of this going on. There was a lot of the hand motions. There was a lot of hand speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I come from an Italian house, very similar to a Greek house.
Mm-hmm.
And he who talks more with his hands wins the argument, wins the conversation,
mm-hmm.
and wins, basically.
Right.
And so there was a lot of talking with the hands. I did not know that I talked so much with my hands until I had the pleasure of seeing myself on video and fast-forwarding. And, of course, there's nothing like seeing you fast-forwarding and seeing all that. So I've learned my lesson. I'm going to try
mm-hmm.
and not... do the hands.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you can do it a little bit. It's okay.
Yeah, so
you
I
don't
think
have
like,
to just, you
like
know.
Maybe down here.
Okay.
Well,
it was like cue card changing.
That was very robotic.
Right.
Well, keep it moving.
Uh-huh.
And also there was a lot of banging on the table, which microphone picks up.
Yes.
And I didn't realize that until we heard the audio version on SoundCloud, which... was very, very distracting. So I've learned lessons. You know, it's a learning process, and I'm very glad to take you with me. So
it was like a tutorial doing a radio show that's taped.
I'm very glad to take you with me.
It's okay.
I want to introduce you to the Greek goddess of comedy, Ellen Karras. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to have you here. I've been wanting to do a show for a very long time,
yes.
and you and I have talked at length about that we really should do a show together.
Yes.
That first of all...
I'm all for that. Are you listening, networks?
Are you... No, seriously. And so I'm really just very excited to welcome you here. If you want to learn more about Ellen, you can, of course, check out her DVD, Greek Chicks Rule.
Greek Chicks Rule.
And you can find her at ellenkarras.com, where I think you can get copies of the DVD there.
Yes.
And you're on Twitter, Greek Chick Comic, at on Twitter. Yeah. And so it's very exciting.
It's a theme. The Greek thing is a theme.
And so let's just get to know a little bit about you. So how long have you been doing comedy?
You know... When comics are asked this question, mm-hmm. they count the absolute first time they went on stage, and it's consecutive.
Mm-hmm.
I, on the other hand, because the other side of my brain, well, one side's empty, and the other side is in half. So one half is comedic and the other half is math oriented.
Right.
So I need to count it as is. So the first time I got on stage was in 98.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't count back that far because, you know, when you first start out, it's very sporadic. You do a lot of open mics. You do bringer shows. So I try to sort of consolidate when I started to do, you know, real shows and do shows more consistently. So I always say over 10 years, but, you know, not 15.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of how I do.
Yeah.
I like to quantify it.
And so I
but mm-hmm. A long time. It's a long time.
And we go back a long way.
Yes.
Now I started doing comedy steadily because I actually started and then I stopped. Mm. I got freaked out by a heckler in San Diego, and then I went off and became a DJ, and then sort of returned to comedy in 2006,
mm-hmm.
and that was when I met you, like 2006, 2007.
Right.
I think we met at Gotham.
Right.
And you were doing the Greek Gods of Comedy tour with Jim Andrinos.
Correct.
And
Basil.
And Basil, mm-hmm. right? And then we met and we did some shows together. I produced some shows over at Metropolitan Room, the Women We Love shows, mm-hmm. and all those shows. And so that's when I first became blissfully aware of the Greek Goddess of Comedy and fell in love instantly.
Well, I do want to mention that you, and I've said this to you in person and I'm going to say it on camera, you are a huge supporter of having women on your comedy shows.
Mm.
And you have no problem having an all-woman lineup with you as the MC.
Yeah.
And I want people to know how unique and how unusual that is. Because usually with a show, if it's a comedy show and it's called a woman show, and there's never really more than three, and it's sort of like a theme night and it's all this jazz.
Right.
There's never on a regular show where there's an MC and a feature and a headliner, which is what we call a regular show. It's very rare that you would see two women and a man. It's usually two men and a woman. So
yeah.
I and all of my female comedy comedian friends, thank you very much for doing that.
Oh.
And you put on great shows, very, really fun shows in New York City. It's always a good time. You always break your neck to get, you know, as much audience as you can. So I love that about you. And I noticed that, like, right away. And I just thought that I was like, wait, you know, wow. But really? So I just think it's amazing.
Thank you.
So,
I mean, I really did put a lot of thought into that. I mean, when I did those Women We Love shows, and I think those were going on in 2009 or 2010, mm-hmm. that was when I was doing them. Because I really do. I mean, if I had my druthers and I could, I would be surrounded by women constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have, because I find women's sensibilities very similar to my own, comedically and in life.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing. I think that there was a point where Mama Ragu, sat down and prayed to baby Jesus,
mm-hmm.
when I was born, and said, "Please, Jesus, let him be surrounded by women
mm-hmm.
his whole life." And then I, of course, grew up to be a big queen, surrounded by women my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that she's kicking herself, saying, "I really wish I would have been more specific."
Well, yeah. Well, but listen, Jesus brought you to where you needed to be. So
yeah, exactly, and she's very grateful. You know, I actually have to think to include a man in the shows.
Really?
It's gotten to that point where I, now I do the shows at the Greenwich Village Comedy Club.
Which are terrific, by the way. I really love that venue.
Thank you.
I mean, I love the Stonewall, but I think with the Greenwich Village Comedy Club, also you get more traffic. You know, people know it as a club. And it's just great. It's a nice little room. They're very nice there too.
And the staff and the management of the club is great, and they've been incredibly supportive. Because not every show is like a home run.
Right.
Sometimes there are shows where it's scraping,
mm-hmm.
but we do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Last time we had well over 50 people at the show. It was packed. And then there are times where it's 20, 25, 30, but you do what you do. The thing is that I book these shows well in advance, And so right now I'm doing March and April shows. Mm-hmm. And I actually still do things with a list, with paper, and I actually make lists. And I actually have to think, okay, you got to find a guy. Just put a guy in there because I will just look at the roster of people that I work with and automatically just say, okay, she's funny, she's funny, she's funny, and I haven't worked with her. She's funny, she's funny, and next. And it's all women all the time.
Yeah, you know what I wish? I wish you had your own network, is really what I... Right. I'm going to actually go home and pray to the baby Jesus that Tom gets his own network, because I think this is going to bode well for me. So
I really think that there are two types of kids. There's the real funny kids, and then there are the ones that are introverted into themselves. Mm-hmm. So what kind of kid were you?
And you mean kid like 6, 7, 8 type thing, or teenager?
No, growing up.
I was very extroverted with people that I was related to and people that were my friends and I was comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was super outgoing with people that I didn't know. I wasn't like super shy. I wouldn't hide behind my mother, but I was very comfortable with people that I knew. I don't know about how funny I was, but I was very animated, mm-hmm. very theatrical, very expressive. Mm-hmm. So that for sure. High school, I had my group of friends. So not the class clown. No. Definitely on the, like, again, shy. I won't say shy. I wasn't shy. I mean, if you spoke to me, I spoke. I wasn't one of those people, or, you know, like the mumblers, or you mm-hmm. can't get a word, mm-hmm. you know, you can't hear what they're saying. But I definitely wasn't, you know, in cheerleading or you know, or I didn't join the theater club or anything like that. I basically went to school and went home and watched soap operas and ate cookies. That's basically what I did.
A lot like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I went to school. First of all, I was painfully shy. Mm-hmm. Painfully shy. Mm-hmm. Had a mumbling problem, a mm-hmm. speech impediment, and a fear of public speaking, mm-hmm. which is ironic considering what I do.
Right.
And immediately after getting out of school, I'd run home and watch the Phil Donahue show, mm-hmm. and then later, when she came on the air, Oprah. Mm-hmm. And that consumed my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was part of the Oprah generation. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I distinctly remember running home from my friends, if I had any, in high school, mm-hmm. and just watched Phil and Oprah.
Well, I had a friend that lived down the block from me who was a grade older than I was. And we were very good friends. And she was on the soccer team, and she also sang, and she did theater. And I basically lived vicariously through her. Like, I would go to her house and wait for her to come home from soccer practice. And so it's pretty pathetic, but that's it was.
You come from a Greek family,
yes.
Right? So is it did you come from a very large Greek family?
Well, I have two siblings, so mm-hmm. my immediate family isn't particularly large, but I do have a lot of cousins and mm-hmm. aunts and uncles and great aunts and uncles. So, mm-hmm. you know, in totality, it's a large Greek family.
So was it like the Greek family like we saw in My Big Fat Greek Wedding, where it's, you know, tremendous amount of people and everybody's very involved in life?
Yes and no. Yes, in that... you know, certainly, well, I'll take the immediate family. On my mother's side, my father was one of seven boys. So I think that's a sort of a different dynamic. Mm-hmm. My mother had a sister and two brothers, and my grandmother and my great-grandmother. So that side, and my mother was, of course, very close with her mother, like would not buy curtains without calling my grandmother first to get her approval. I mean, right. it was like over the top. Right. Would not buy anything, no home purchase without getting my grandmother's approval. And my grandmother was a very strong...
Even after being married?
Oh, yeah. Really? Wait, after, wow. like as of 2 years ago. and that's only because my grandmother couldn't get in the car anymore to go to the store. But so on my mother's side, her family was very much, on one hand, I'll say up in our business, but on the other hand, also, my mother luckily, and she will say this to this day, had a lot of resources to help. So there were no babysitters. There was a slew of people that would take care of us, right. whether it be my aunt or my grandmother right. or my great-grandmother. So there was a big team of people. And but when you have that, you also have people that know everything that's going on in your life.
Right.
So from that, on that side, there was. On my father's side, it was a little bit different just because, you know, again, he had brothers and they had wives and, you know, so that's a different dynamic.
Which is good and bad. Having yeah. people who know everything about you and going on in your life is good. But it's also, you know, it also can be
right.
a hindrance.
Yeah, yeah. I would say if I had to measure it, it was on the unhealthy side. It was a little too much.
Italian families are very similar. I think yeah. Italian and Greek families are very similar.
Yeah, but know. But in a good memory way, I think that I really learned, and it's in an imprint in me about family and. I don't want to use the word traditional, but you know what I'm saying. Structure, a good family structure, mm-hmm. love, people being there for you, the dinner on Sunday, mm-hmm. which I think is really important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people can't help it if their parents are divorced. Mine weren't, although they should have been. But there is something to be said about that. That I think, you know, people today, I mean, you know, we hear it on TV all the time that you know, that Sunday dinner or just that sitting down to dinner concept is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was good. And it was just simpler. We didn't have so much stuff. And mm-hmm. It was just a simpler time. And it was, you know, it was fine to just go over each other's house, eat, have coffee, have a lot of desserts, laugh, tell stories, make fun mm-hmm. of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, those times are, you know, I really look back on those childhood times in mm-hmm. in my own childhood. And we had dinner, I think, together almost every night, but definitely Sunday, without a doubt. You could not even think of missing it.
Sunday was church.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Sunday school up till whenever Sunday school ended, 12. Come home, my mother would put, you know, the roast or the chicken or the turkey, whatever, in the oven. You'd smell it. It smelled mm-hmm. great with the potatoes, whatever. My father, that you know, he worked 6 days a week. That was his day. We, you know, if it was the fall, we watched football. We watched something on TV. If it was nice outside, we went out. We came back. We had dinner. It was great. It was like chill. And then, you know, also that prepared you for Monday, mm-hmm. where like now Sunday is just another work day. It's just another day. You know, stores are open. You can do anything on Sunday where right. like there, you know, growing yeah. up, there yeah. were like certain stores that would be closed or certain things you couldn't do on Sunday because it wasn't available, where now it doesn't matter.
So many things were closed on Sunday. Yeah. I remember being yeah. growing up. My parents used to bribe me to go to church. They said, if you go to church and you behave, mm-hmm. we'll go to Dunkin' Donuts on the way home.
A reward.
Mm,
those frosted donuts. Oh, nothing like that chocolate frosted with the icing. Oh, that Dunkin' Donuts. All right, let's not go there.
Unbelievable.
Just yet.
I was in Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay, we'll go there.
Let's just go there. I was in Dunkin' Donuts.
It's the croissant in the room.
I just could not believe. Okay, so I was in Dunkin' Donuts the other day because everybody knows that not only do I have a Splenda theft addiction,
yes,
like I must take it.
You do.
I also have a iced coffee addiction. Like I need to have. I need to
ice. What about hot coffee?
I can't have it hot.
Really?
No, I can't. I can't drink it hot. It has to be so extremely sweet in order for me to enjoy it.
Is that because
hot.
It's cold though, and it has to be? See, I mean, I wake up,
mm-hmm.
brush my teeth, wash my hands, blah, blah, and right to the coffee machine. Mm-hmm. I cannot function without, especially that first cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm having coffee now. This is the second cup, and then I'm okay. So I need coffee in my life, no question.
Yeah.
Iced coffee. But if I woke up and someone said, you have just iced coffee. Remember when we had the blackout of 2003?
Yeah.
I was like a crack addict. I was walking up and down the Upper East Side because that morning we didn't have lights, looking for hot coffee. I'm like, some restaurant must have a generator where I can have hot coffee. And I found a couple places with iced coffee. I'm like, I can't.
But also, you have an electric coffee maker?
Well, actually, what I have is a Keurig,
oh,
you know,
okay.
with the K cups, which is
oh.
awesome.
Even I'm very back particular. Then?
No, no, what did I have that? I probably had a drip,
a
you know, or a Krups, a Krups, yeah.
You know, Mama Ragu does the percolator.
The percolator, that's very old school.
Yeah.
You know what's good with the percolator? The coffee will be hot, as opposed to having to microwave it 25,000 times.
Yeah.
No, the percolator is good.
No, my morning routine, I get up and I have freezing cold water. Like, I can't have hot coffee.
You must be, like, hot inside or something.
No, I am. I'm like, at least 10 degrees. I'm like a dog. I'm 10 degrees. I'm 10 degrees warmer than everybody else.
Uh-huh.
And so I have to have freezing cold water, and then iced coffee, and I can't even drink it hot. Wow. But here's the thing. So I was at Dunkin' Donuts the other day, and, you know, it's been since June since I've actually had a donut because of the whole type 2 diabetes thing, which maybe we'll get to some other time. And I never noticed how beautiful they're all lined up and shiny, and they got the glaze on and the spotlights on them, and it's just...
It's like they're the stars.
Beautiful.
They're the star of the show.
Welcome to the show.
But you know what also I find? Because I know I have a horrific sweet addiction. So I feel your pain. I totally understand. And even though, knock on wood, I don't have diabetes thus far, thank God, but you still shouldn't eat too much sugar because that will lead to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you what's tough. Now, for the holiday season, everything is in green and red.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, green and red are beautiful colors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who could pass up green and red M&Ms? Nobody.
Right.
So unless you come from, like, you know, like Afghanistan or someplace where they don't have them, which that's why I could never move there. But it's the same thing with the fall, because the fall they do everything in the brown and in the orange and in the pumpkin. So it's all those colors. It's very appealing. I mean, I will crave, like, a Reese's peanut butter, not seeing the actual one, just seeing, like, the foil, making it like a fall foil.
Mm-hmm.
Just that gets to me. The kisses, you know, and the different colors.
Yeah.
I
it's all,
I know.
It's all
I know.
Marketing.
Yeah, I know.
And it's crazy. And it gets you. And I didn't realize about how shiny they were, and they were just beautiful to look at.
Yeah,
and then
gorgeous.
They had the little munchkins and over here, and then they have all the glazed ones and the jelly and everything
they
else.
They know what they're doing.
And it was so so beautifully set up, and spotlights on it and everything.
Yeah.
Really amazing.
Yeah.
So,
and here we're talking about it.
I know, it's crazy. And we've spent far too much time talking about Dunkin' Donuts. They're not even a sponsor of the show.
Oh, how dare they?
I know.
Forget that. I mean, I'm going to go to Krispy Kreme.
So you had started out in business.
Very much so.
So tell us and everybody at home about the transition from business into comedy. Because I know that it's a very big thing. A lot of lawyers get into comedy.
Yes.
It's a very, very big thing.
Yes. Well, let me just give you the background for a minute. I studied accounting in college. I have a bachelor's degree in accounting because I loved math. I loved business. I actually had an uncle that was in, or still is, in public accounting. He does more taxes now, but and I saw that he did very well. And you know, I certainly was going to work in New York City. There was no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the whole thing always just excited me to be in one of those offices and to make stuff happen. And so I knew right away when I graduated, I went in as an accounting major. I never changed. And I got a job before I even graduated with a public accounting firm. And I liked it. I mean, I ran around the city. I was an auditor. I schlepped, you know, cases of work papers all over the place. Of course, you know, when you're a junior and on the low level, they made you do all the grunty work and stuff. But I was learning a lot. And what I did love was I used to go to different companies, and that was great.
Mm-hmm.
That I found very interesting. Some of the work was not exciting. But anyway, I did that for quite a few years. And then I wanted to get my MBA in finance because all of my friends were going to Wall Street and making a ton more money and working less hours and having a whole lot more fun. You know, limousines and champagne and the whole bit. And there I am on, you know, Sunday afternoon, you know, sitting next to Toby, you know, who's kosher and smells. So not that the two are related, but you get my drift. And so I got my MBA at night and I worked. And while I was getting my MBA, I wound up getting a job on Wall Street at one of the investment banks in derivatives. So I did that for quite a while.
Which
and
one?
Because
I worked on Wall Street, too.
Yeah.
Which one?
Oh, Merrill Lynch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And great company. It was a great company until they screwed it up. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for quite a while. And then I went for my CFA exam, the Certified Financial Chartered Financial Analyst. And it's in three parts. You take it over the course of 3 years. And I took the first part and I passed. And I took the second part and I didn't pass because I didn't study. And it was uber, uber hard. And I said, you know what? I'm done. I'm tired. I've got, you know, like, how many more things do I need on my wall? Unless I was going to go for my PhD in economics, which prior to that was a goal. And I thought, oh, I'll go to Columbia. And then afterwards, I'm like, you know what? I have to do something creative. I had this creative side to me. And when I would be at work or when I would be in a meeting, I would just say funny things in my head to just kind of get me through. Sometimes it was almost like there were times where I was like on the outside looking in and I would see how serious people got about like the general ledger and the account balance didn't reconcile. But you would think it was like a blood transfusion. Like, you know, this was, you know, we'll fix it. We'll figure, you know, as long as nobody's committing fraud or we didn't really find anything super heinous where it could bring the company down or it really affect the stockholder price. I mean, we can fix it. You know, even if it's an error, you can fix it. So I think that was a little bit, got me sort of like, oh God, I don't know if I could do this forever. And so anyway, to get to the cut to the chase, I took an improv class, very first acting class or of any type. And I loved it at the New School. And I was like, this is so much fun. Mm-hmm. I could pretend I'm eating a fruit or putting on mascara and there's no mirror there. And it was so freeing. It was almost like I was in prison or my mind was in prison. And so then I was like, okay, I'm going to take another class. And I took an acting class and a monologue class. And I went to Wies Barron and I took a scene study class. And it just morphed. And then I thought, I was so naive. I was like, you know what? They had the commercial classes there. I was like, oh, I'll take a commercial class. And and then I'll get a headshot and I'll be on a commercial.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen. And so that kind of went on. And then I decided to study with the teacher because I was sort of floating around for a long time. I was like, all right, I want to find somebody and grow with them. And I studied with Penny Templeton, and I was with her for like a year. And she would have us improv something from our life before we would start a scene. And at the time, one of my sisters was getting married, and it was, you know, the whole Greek thing. And I would come in and, you know, now you're asking me about, like, you know, the families being close. I mean, you would think we all were getting married. I mean, I was sucked into that vortex like you have no idea. It's like, look, I'm the maid of honor. I've got my certain responsibilities. I have to give her the shower. I have to go to the Greek store and buy the almonds that are dipped in white lead paint. Like, I know what I have to do, but, like, why do I have to have angst as if I'm the bride? So I would improv this every week because there was always like a new episode. And
from my
perspective, she would just like, you know, like let it out. And I would just improv whatever was going on. Like my grandmother stops in the middle of Ditmars Boulevard in a store and he goes, oh, my God. And we're like, what? She goes, we forgot to invite Yanula. And I'm like, who's Yanula? She's my hairdresser. She does my hair. And I'm like, this is what I almost got clipped by a cab because we had, you know, because this was the most important thing. So after I was done, Penny said, this is my one aha moment in my life. I only have one. Not when I met my husband. This was the one. Mm-hmm. And she said, I have two notes for you. One is you should, I hope you talk about this in your stand-up. It's so funny. I'm like, stand-up? I go, I don't do stand-up. She goes, well, get some. That's what she said, her exact words. And the second thing was, you should write a show, a one-woman show about your sister's Greek wedding. And I said, who the hell is going to want to see that? Because I have vision, you see. And, you know, $600 million later.
And a couple of mansions in L.A.
Yes.
Right.
Enjoy, Nia Vardalos. No, I can't. She was working on it for a long time, so I can't be mad at her. And someday I'll find her in person and kiss her ass and want a job. But anyway, that was it. And then I went home that night. I will never forget. I was in the cab and I thought, stand-up comedy. Wow. That would be that would be great because what I would do is I would get backstage and I would send my headshots out and I'd get nothing. And I said, but with stand up, I'll get stage time. Mm-hmm. And then of course that was at the time we actually had sitcoms on. I know, kids, sitcoms, look it up. And Seinfeld was on, and Brett Butler and Roseanne and Ellen and Tim Allen and Drew Carey. And I thought, oh, this is great. And then this way I can. You know, because they're always looking for your story and your perspective, and there's no nothing on TV about a Greek family and blah, blah, blah. So that was sort of like the process. Then the next week, I got backstage again. I'm looking. I'm like, comedy class. And I saw they were giving at the comic strip. I went up to the comic strip. It was like me and DF, who's still teaching to this day. And, you know, I didn't even know how to write a joke. I mean, I just knew, you know, things to say that were funny, and they helped you structure a joke, and then, you know, you went on and you did your 5 minutes and, you know, and more from there. So I did this for quite a long time, and, you know, then I found out about open mics, and you know, it's interesting with business, in the business world, and especially because I always worked for a large company, you know, you would have human resources, you know, later on we would have our internet, our intranet, where you can look and find perhaps another job. You'd have mentors. You know, there was a process. You got promoted. With this, you are, like, so flying without a net. There is no structure. You make friends. You make friends with other comics. And that's how you get to know things. And you go to open mics because you need to meet other people. And you know, again, one thing sort of leads to another thing that leads to another thing. And then... every year that would go by, you know, got to the point where then when I started to really get more bona fide gigs and real gigs, and I was really emceeing and stuff like that, every year would go by, and I worked on Wall Street, so we got bonuses, and I said, okay, one more bonus.
Right.
Okay, and then the next year, okay, one more bonus, because I had a decent paying job, and one more bonus, and one more bonus. And then finally, in 2008, when a few months before that, one of the hedge funds at Bear Stearns collapsed. This was before the real collapse. I said, I felt like that was the beginning of the end. And I was like, you know what? I've saved up enough money, I hope. And now's a good time. And I've done, you know, I did a lot of shows and I really got into the Greek market at that point. And I said, you know, now's the time. So I quit. And it hasn't been easy. And I'll tell you what one of the hardest transitions was, aside from the fact that I thought that there'd be more work, was I was so conditioned to get up every day, weekdays, and some weekends, and go to a place and have a structure and know what my job was. And I've never worked for myself before. And to get up in the morning and still be in your pajamas and go to your computer with your, you know, with your cup of coffee and really be disciplined to do work.
Right.
I'm not one of the, you know, I didn't start comedy right out of college or right out of high school or whatever. So I didn't have that mindset. You have to really, really, really be disciplined. And as we know, too, as an artist and as an entertainer, and I do acting and I've done also my own radio shows and et cetera, it's like a lot of different balls during the day. It's, you know, it's not like you even if you're working on a sitcom, you know, you go to that sitcom, that's your job. But when you're at this level, you're just doing so many different things, and it's a discipline. And that was the one surprising thing I found out about myself. I really thought I was a disciplined person. And I thought, oh, I would have an easy transition because, oh, I got my MBA at night and I did all these things. But it is really different. It's a very different discipline.
Mm-hmm. And what were those first gigs like for you? Like once you...
The back in the day?
Yeah. Because I really think that somewhere along the way, things have changed. Even in the 8 years or so that I've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The comedy has changed. I notice that there is this feeling of entitlement that a lot of these young comedians coming up now have because of reality TV and because of what looks like is so easy.
Right.
And so what was it like for you when you first started doing comedy and going to the open mics, and what were those experiences like for you?
Well, the open mics.
Because you were working. You said that you were working at the same time.
Yes. Well, the open mics, I think, I mean, you have to do that. And that's a safe place because you know, you can bring up your notes and you can fumble a little bit and, you know, you have to do that. I was very conscientious when I did. Because when you even do bringer shows, your friends are paying to come. And I'm still to this day, I'm very conscientious about the fact that people pay good money. And I don't care if it's $5. They've paid money to see you. And you have to deliver regardless of how you feel or how the audience is reacting. So I think that, you know, so I'm conscientious about that. I don't know if that's maturity or, again, because I had a whole nother career and I got a paycheck or whatever. So to your question, sometimes I feel like the younger ones, and I'm talking about a little bit like younger in age, think that it's okay, you know, like they see the audience isn't laughing and they're like, you know, screw you guys, or that's funny, or no, dude, you need to figure out a way while you're up there to make them laugh. That's your job.
Right.
So that I definitely think is a huge difference. And also, I mean, I've been on shows where, you know, I was hired as the MC and then the feature, which is a great spot to have, is somebody that has much, much less experience than me, and I feel not as funny. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, you're up in some place like Connecticut, they're 25 years old, everybody, you know, most of the audience is, you know, between 25 and up, let's say, and they're saying jokes about smoking pot in their basement, and you've got to few people that are laughing, and you've got a few people that are older that are laughing because at some point maybe they smoked pot, but you're not really resonating anything. And I also think like you haven't really had a real life if you're still living with your parents and that's what you're talking about, unless you can make those stories really, really funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then just again, just some of the humor, and then the big humor, the big thing I have a huge problem with especially with some of the younger ones, but is, some of the humor that's very crass, it's not funny. Because seasoned comedians can do crass humor, but they can make it funny.
Right.
So my thing is, and I get very uncomfortable because it's like, okay, number one, you notice nobody's laughing.
Right.
You know, don't go there. Say something else. Talk about your parents. That will at least resonate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that I find they're just sort of up there doing their thing, not being conscientious that there's an audience that they're playing to.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You know, when you produce the amount of shows that I produced, one time when a comedian, I had her headlining, and she called 2 hours before the show to say that she just had a headache and she didn't think that she was going to be able to make it. And I, you know, what can you do? But
right.
Can I just tell you that, do you know how many headaches I have had to walk through? And you just do it.
Right.
You know, you get a little bit of adrenaline rush when they say your name and you feed off the audience. And that will usually last 10 minutes. And then and you just work through the headache.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that I've ever canceled a show, particularly when I know that people are depending on me. I don't think that I've ever said, I know that I've never said because I have a headache.
Right.
I'm very conscious of lateness and things like that. And if I feel like I'm going to be late, I'll always call or text or something.
Right.
That, you know, I always give people a little heads up of how I'm doing. But I've never said, "Oh, I have a headache," or you know, some. This is the whole thing that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, a sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
And taking it seriously. No matter what gig it is, if I say I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. If you say to me, Ellen, listen, you got to work clean, I'm going to work clean. I mean, you know, you do what is described, or else don't do it, because you know what? There's a zillion other people online willing to take that spot. So take it seriously.
Yeah. Now, everyone who knows me knows that I am a tremendous Donna Summer fan. It's almost madness. It's almost at the point where her estate is getting a protective order at this point.
Oh, like a stalking thing?
Yeah,
stalking thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's time to start doing the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
I've been obsessed from the very beginning, I'm a major, major Donna Summer fan. And on the Tom Ragusa Sit Down Comedy Show, we have a segment called the Donna Summer Video of the Day, where we show a clip, something from the internet, and then we show it. So today's clip is from is a clip of Bad Girls from the 1980 ABC TV special. So what I thought we would do is we would see a little bit of that, and then you and I will come back after, and we'll talk about it.
We'll opine. Now, let me just tell you something. As a little kid, I saw that, and that really was the thing that hooked me. And she was like, "You taking me to the jailhouse?" And he said, "No, to my house." And I was like, "They took her away." So that was. Yes, I. You know what? Twiggy looks awesome.
Right.
I've never seen long hair Twiggy.
Right.
I've only seen short hair Twiggy. Right. Pictures. Mm-hmm. And Twiggy looked like Cheryl Ladd from Charlie's Angels. Remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I always wanted to be Cheryl Ladd with the blonde, you know, because I always wanted to be blonde with blue eyes.
But she
had her hair like clipped up like that. I loved that. I thought that was great hair.
And I thought that growing up, I thought that was the other one was Ethel Merman.
So the bad girls were
Twiggy, Deborah Lee Scott, and Pat Ast.
Uh huh. Now Deborah Lee Scott has a bit of an overbite, right? Doesn't she look like she had like a little bit of an overbite?
Yeah.
Right. Am I right?
Possibly.
No? Possibly? Okay. I don't know why.
I don't know how one would develop one. So the whole special really influenced me because it came out in it was recorded in 79. It was it aired January of 1980.
Right.
And it featured all the songs, and it had a little featurette with her young daughter Mimi. Mm-hmm. There was this little bedtime thing that went on. Ben Vereen was on the special,
mm-hmm.
and the guy who played Benson, Robert Guillaume.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a great
It film. Really resonated with you.
It resonated with me.
Yes, I could tell.
I know nothing about it.
Well, it's very campy. It's very reflective of how they did things. At that time, there's no techno. I mean, it was all sort of in one stage, very simple costumes.
Right.
Nothing crazy, just sort of dancing around, very simple. And Donna looked hot, though.
Real instruments.
Yeah.
And what I don't think escaped anybody who was watching, who was an adult at the time, it certainly escaped me. You know, the album was a theme album, all about prostitution and stuff like that.
Oh, was it?
Hot Stuff, Sunset People, Bad Girls, those are all euphemisms for prostitution. The cover of the album, she's there, in basically her bra.
Uh-huh.
And she is a woman of the night, a working girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the back of
Didn't
the album.
Didn't she do, what about Works Hard for the Money? Which one?
She was a waitress. It was a whole,
right. Okay. Yeah. That wasn't on that album.
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, sorry. But, well, now that I know that you're the expert, I can use
you
as a reference.
Was, that was 5 years later.
Right.
Okay. But the thing is that that whole thing, because I was a young kid, that whole thing escaped me. I had no idea what all this was.
As it should have escaped you.
Yeah. I don't think that if this album would have come out today, it would have escaped these sophisticated 10-year-olds that exist in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 70s, mm-hmm. if I was 10, mm-hmm. it certainly escaped me. I had no idea what the album was about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like one of those major albums of my childhood. Mm-hmm. The Bad Girls Tour was the first concert I ever went to.
Oh, wow.
1979, Papa Ragu took me.
Oh, that was very Papa-like of him. How was he? Did he stay in the seats or did he?
No, he was jumping around.
Oh, was he? Oh, okay,
He loved Donna Summer.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so these were the concerts that I went to as a kid. Okay, first concert, Donna Summer, Bad Girls. Second concert, Kiss, the Dynasty Tour.
Uh-huh.
With the fire blowing and the blood and everything else.
Uh-huh.
Third concert, Billy Joel.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
who's coming back to Madison Square Garden once a month?
Once a month.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Sold out until June, by the way.
Yeah, well, I believe it.
Yeah, but just the variety of shows that these people, being my parents, took me to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Donna Summer, Kiss, and Billy Joel, you couldn't be any further one from the other.
Correct. Very diverse.
Very diverse. So we just got done with the holiday, the big holiday, and we're in the middle of Christmas.
Yes.
And so...
Cookie and chocolate season, as I call it.
Cookie.
Because every time you turn around, someone's either offering you a piece of chocolate or a cookie.
And so what do you think of this whole Black Friday madness that's going on?
I don't like it. It's insanity. It's just degrading society even more and more each year. And it's a farce because you will be able to get that TV, whatever that is, that DVR, guaranteed at that price a week before Christmas or a couple of days before Christmas, as long as you sort of know what you want, or better yet, after Christmas, if you can hold out. I mean, you can always cut a picture. If you're not buying it for yourself, you can always cut a picture of whatever the item is. And then give it to that person, and then just say it's on order, or I'll get it for you.
Mm-hmm.
To leave your Thanksgiving with your family, assuming you have one or friends, and to go at 5 o'clock, to the store, I think it's very sad. I mean, look, is it the end of the world? No. Is it the worst thing you can do? Of course not. I mean, I get that, but I just think that we're down to very few traditions. And the one thing about Thanksgiving that's really nice is it's not a religious holiday. So nobody is, not celebrating it. And unless you don't believe in the whole Mayflower story, you're anti-Mayflower. So, we can all, be in this one together.
Right.
And it's a just a, you know, it's a once a year. I mean, hopefully you get together with people you love more than once a year. But, you know, it's a once a year time where we're all sort of doing something together as a country. And we're even eating some of the same foods, which I think is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tradition. And going to the store on Thanksgiving Day at 5, 6 o'clock is not a tradition. You know, then the whole thing about getting up at 4 and getting to the store at 6. I guess being it the next day, I'm more used to that. But when I heard the stores were opening up on Thanksgiving, plus there's got to be people that have to work that don't want to work. And I think that that's they're forced to work. Well, and you know what? Whether they get double time or not doesn't mean anything.
They don't want anybody double time. Walmart is not paying anybody double time.
Yeah, all right.
No, I mean, Walmart barely pays them at all.
Well, what I'm saying is, it really doesn't matter. So I think it's crazy. I don't go out. I don't certainly go to the major stores. I stay in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, that a lot of places aren't as chaotic as I think, like the Walmarts, the Targets, the Macy's. I think those like big stores are the ones that are really, you know, those are the ones that are nuts. And, you know, they instigate this, too,
right,
by doing it. So, you know, they're a big part of it. But for people to be animals and they open the doors and it's like the running of the bulls.
It's like cattle.
Disgusting. That is not human. And
people died.
What I was going to say was now, but first it sounded funny, right? It was a joke. But now people are really getting hurt. Some woman brought a taser.
Right.
I mean, that's just sick. That is just such a waste of human life.
A couple years ago, there was a security guard who got trampled.
Yeah,
and
I
he lost
that.
His life.
Yes.
Working as a temp at it was either Kmart or Walmart.
Right.
And
that was Long Island, I think. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
And it's just so ridiculous.
Yeah,
I find the whole thing ridiculous. I was hoping. Against hope that this year, because Thanksgiving and Hanukkah fell on the same day,
right.
that absolutely no one would go to the stores.
Right.
But it was greater than ever.
Right.
And it just was such a major disappointment.
You know, this is a little off topic, but I'm getting also to the point where, I love Christmas. I'm getting a little bit more deeper into the spirituality of it and really, you know, its meaning. As time goes on, and not to say gift giving isn't nice, and certainly to see kids, you know, when they wake up in the morning and Santa Claus, I had that experience. I wouldn't say, oh, okay, well, now we shouldn't do that anymore type of thing, or that Santa shouldn't come anymore because there's Santa. But it does have to draw a line. Like my husband and I, for example, at this point now, you know what we did last year? We, the next day or 2 days later, we went up to Woodbury Commons, which is a great outlet place, and we shopped for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
And it was really nice because, you know, we would get up in the morning and give each other gifts, and it was like, okay, it just wears off after a while. So I'm in a strange place with the gift giving. Not that I wouldn't want to give somebody a gift, but I just there's too much emphasis on it. You know, what am I going to get? Like that really isn't the meaning. That's not the whole purpose. So we've sort of and not only that, again, a little gift is nice, a little whatever it is, socks, perfume, but when you have to go all out and spend all your money that you don't have to buy Christmas gifts, I think that's ridiculous.
Right. And whether you believe that it's, the birth of Jesus or whether you believe that it's just a season of love, I just think that the retail stores have just taken it and they have destroyed Christmas.
And
when I saw that they were doing this now to Thanksgiving, I literally said to Mama Ragu, you see what they did? It took them 20 years, but they destroyed Christmas.
Right.
And now no one has any knowledge or point of reference of what Christmas really means anymore.
Right. It's about this. It's about shopping. It's about gift.
It's a gift and the 35% off and get your gift and get your code. And now they're doing. Now you're going to see that now that we have a frame of a point of reference that that this Thanksgiving was like a major selling day. Now, next year, all the stores are going to be open on Thanksgiving. And now it will take 20 years and they'll destroy Thanksgiving. And then they're going to move on to Halloween.
Well, I think they've already
destroyed Halloween. Get your hands off my candy. That's what I have to say. Now, there's this whole thing that goes on in the news, the war on Christmas. Do you think that there's really war?
Okay, so we probably will disagree on this, but that's okay. We still love each other. I do think that asking a town to take a manger out is what's it to you? I mean, I don't mean to sound Bill O'Reilly. I take that back. But you want to go back. Christmas was started because of. We're celebrating the birth of Jesus.
Right.
Whether you believe or not, that's fine. But that's what it means.
Right.
So I like to see that perspective out there as well. I mean, we are a country built on Judeo-Christian values. I realize that the demographics have changed a bit. I get that. I understand that. I respect that. But in the same token, that's what it's about. And if you're going to start slamming that, then let's not celebrate. Then forget it. So, about the whole thing with Happy Holidays and Merry Christmas. You know, again, I mean, I don't want to get on my high horse, but I say Merry Christmas.
Right.
I don't say Merry Christmas if I know you're Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I do say I say Happy Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Christmas. It's Christmas. Right. Deal with it.
Right.
So yes, I think that there's a bit of a cultural war. I don't think I'm appalled when there's a lawsuit involved to take the manger out. That bothers me. Like, okay, you don't like it? Totally cool. I don't get it, but I'm fine with that. But now you're going to spend resources, taxpayer money, so you can fight not to see this manger that's up for what, 3 weeks?
Yeah. And you know, there have been people who have been agnostic and atheist since the beginning of time.
Right.
When I was growing up, we never had any sort of lawsuits. Mm-hmm. You know what I do now to get under people's skin? When I write Christmas cards, mm-hmm. and they have to say Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I say Merry Christmas, and the T is a cross, just to get under people's skin, because I just want to emphasize that I don't say Xmas,
right.
And I don't say Happy Holidays.
Right.
I say Merry Christmas, and if I know that you're Jewish, I say Happy Hanukkah, or and sometimes I say all three. You know, I include Kwanzaa.
I don't know many Kwanzaa people, so.
No, I know a couple people who celebrate Kwanzaa,
but
which I never understood. I thought it was a new holiday. It's been around for a very long time.
Uh huh.
I think that it's just, you know, but I didn't. I had no idea that there was like a major problem that people had with Christmas.
Yeah.
It was just. Yeah.
And again, we have very few traditions. Let us have our lights, our tree, our pumpkin pie. Leave me alone.
Don't you think, though, it would be funny if there was really an actual war on Christmas, like, you know, Santa
and... real war?
No, like Santa and Rudolph got, attacked on an Amtrak train, and now it started like a whole war.
Right. Well, it's okay, because we have war at Thanksgiving at Walmart, so we don't really need to...
Black Friday has become the war. War on Christmas. Yeah. And guess what? We won. Christmas won.
Yeah.
If there was a war on Christmas, I think we won. Just kidding. So, I'm a big fan of The Chew.
Yes.
And so...
I went to the taping, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah. That's a great show.
Yeah.
Great run show.
Yeah. And I am a big fan of Mario Batali.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a story that was in the news, I would say, maybe 2 weeks ago, where Crocs, which he's famous for wearing those ridiculous orange Crocs.
Yeah.
But, by the way, I did a show at Gotham Comedy Club one time.
Uh-huh.
And so he's there in the audience. And they said, don't acknowledge him. Don't pay attention to him. Don't say, hey, ladies and gentlemen, Mario.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
just make believe that he's not there. He's another member of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I guess his people said something, because everywhere he goes, you know, people may acknowledge him. And he's a very private person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so... So I get up on stage, and all I can see is those orange Crocs. They're, like, glowing.
Mm-hmm.
So Croc, the Croc company, has discontinued the orange color from their line of...
Because?
Don't know why.
Uh-huh.
It was a very popular color because he made the orange Crocs very popular.
Right. Well, I feel that nobody over 6 years old should be wearing Crocs. That's what I feel.
Because all the chefs wear Crocs in the kitchen. It's a very big...
Well, you know what? I guess because it also can get slippery.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to prevent them from, you know, food falls on the floor. Maybe you slip. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe also there's a lot of mats in kitchens, and maybe that grips it better. I mean, I'm just assuming.
I would think that the grease would get in the holes in the Crocs. I've thought about this entirely too much. But the thing is that he ordered 200 before they discontinued the whole color.
Uh-huh.
He went to the main store in Soho here in New York, and he ordered 200 pairs of Crocs at $4 a pop, spending $8,000.
Well, he's got the money. That's clearly no issue.
I don't think I've spent $8,000 on anything at one time.
Uh-huh.
And now, but then that's it. So now you've got to like ration the Crocs. There's going to be Croc rationing. Like, these have to be your show Crocs.
Right. Well, you can get Crocs on eBay. Someone will be selling their Crocs.
You think so?
I mean, if you want to wear used Crocs.
I wouldn't want to wear used Crocs. Have you ever worn a used shoe?
No.
Like, put your foot in the shoe of somebody else?
Well, borrow, you know, if I was at a friend's and I needed to do something. But it's very, I don't like the toe jerk, the foot jerk.
I think it's almost like bad luck. Like, now you're walking in their life.
Oh my gosh!
You think so?
It's a very
Italian thing.
Yeah, but if it was like Kelly Ripa, I'd walk in her shoes. So I don't know. Does that flip either way? I mean,
so we've
Tom and I both just want to be other people. I don't know if you've realized. Tom wants to be Donna Summer.
I want to be
anybody but me.
I want to be Regis.
You want to be? Yeah,
I would like Regis' life, and we could start the show back up again.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Get rid of Gelman.
We'll have somebody else.
Have somebody else.
Yeah.
So we are almost out of the woods with the whole Kardashian family, and I call them the clan because everything is a K.
The K
clan, because although
their choice of men is maybe they're trying to make a statement that they're not the clan and they're going the opposite direction.
But the Keeping Up with the Kardashians is canceled. So that's going to be off the air soon.
But they got to go through Khloe's divorce.
Right. So they're filming the last season. This is the last season.
Uh-huh.
Everyone's gotten married and divorced.
Right. No, but Khloe, that's going to be the big divorce, right? Because she was,
in love with
Lammy. Can I just say one thing, too? I've ever heard them call them out on this. Do you notice when you watch the show that they do a baby voice?
Right, it's
Lammy, like they do, it's different than, you know, Lammy, well, thank you. Like when they meet somebody, hi, thank you. With the baby voice.
No,
You're 47 years old. Stop with the baby voice.
Now, I wonder, do heterosexual men find that attractive? Because as a gay man, it is like nails on a chalkboard to me. Because I'm like, speak like a normal person.
Right.
But do men find that attractive? Like, she's a little girl.
I think they think that they're cute. Mm. They don't realize that they're evil.
Right.
They're evil. They're the Black Friday of pop culture.
Well, we've almost, it's gone.
I don't know. Well, they're not gone. Well, I don't know about that. Well, somebody's going to pop up. They're going to do different things. You know what also, too? They've got a huge market. They've got clothes. I mean, somebody is buying their products, regardless if they're on TV anymore or not. I mean, they have a market. How is who's buying their products? Are these 20-year-old girls? Are they adult women? I mean, somebody's buying, you know, the perfume and the makeup. And the store, yeah, I think so. They have nail polish. I did go to the store in Calabasas a couple years ago. I drove all the way up to Calabasas. And
is that called Dash?
Dash, yeah.
Okay.
And they actually have right near their store, they're in like a little strip mall, but mm-hmm. across the street is a beautiful, I think it's called Calabasas Commons. It's gorgeous. If you ever get to go to Calabasas, go up there. But the store is very small.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that many items. I mean, at least when I went there at the time, very expensive. I mean, I wasn't impressed.
And this was their store that
This was the store that they filmed a lot of things in. I think they might have one in Los Angeles, but this was the main one, the first one that they started. And there was another one. It was Dash and I forget. There was they had a store with just baby clothes in it. So that one that they had closed, because when I was there, they were closing the store. But they've opened one in Soho. They've got one in Miami. I'm just not
impressed. They're taking over cities. Like Khloé and Kim take Miami, take New York. They're taking over cities. They've taken over the airwaves. And I'm so glad that now I think that we're going to be able to reclaim some of the TV time. You know, E! Network, used to be a really fun network, is all Kardashians of the time.
It's Ryan Seacrest's fault. He's the axis of evil. He started this whole thing.
And she needs to be stopped.
Yeah, Chris, she had the...
No, Ryan.
Oh, Ryan. She.
She must be stopped. Yes. She is evil incarnate.
Yes.
I can't stand her.
I've been saying that for a long time.
She's an evil little woman, anyway.
And, I mean, although I'm glad it's not on and they didn't pick it up, because it just goes to show you, but giving Kris Jenner a talk show was... And she was being interviewed, and she's like, yeah, we're going to do a talk show because people are always calling in asking what pocketbook I'm wearing and what makeup we're using. I mean, isn't that what they do on the show? That's exactly what they talk about on the show is all the products that they got for free.
Right.
So, anyway, we can hope. I will pray to the baby Jesus on that one as well.
Because it's a very slow year for the baby Jesus. I'm sure he has nothing better to do than concern himself with Kim, Khloé, and
I'll put this out there. You know, I'm pretty into my religion, and I'm a churchgoer, and I really do believe. But I got to tell you something: this prayer thing, it's not working out for me.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, they've been plugging this for like two millennia now, and nothing's happening. I just want to make that statement.
Okay. So now we're at the point in the podcast where I turn over the podcast to my guest, and we talk about a topic that I know nothing about. And so, Ellen Karas, what do you want to talk about?
You have your Donna Summer obsession. So I've got a few obsessions of my own. Oral hygiene, huge. Can I just make this statement? So much bacteria comes from your mouth into your gums that if people would brush, floss every day, go to the dentist and get their teeth cleaned like four times a year, I'm guarantee you'd have like half the illnesses in the world. Mm. So you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
I did not. Well, I knew that bacteria does come through your gums.
Yeah.
And you can get heart disease.
Yeah,
from
heart
that.
Disease. Right, yeah, exactly. Huge. That huge.
Got to brush the teeth of your dog, too. You know, you can add 4 years to your dog's life just by brushing their teeth.
We don't have a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if we did, I'd get somebody else to brush it. Because usually dog breath's pretty bad.
They do not like their teeth being. No, yeah, they don't. Yeah. They don't like. See, since they can't do it on their own.
Oh, I see.
Now, that's the training video that I would like to see.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you really do have to brush the dog's teeth every day. And getting little Pete Ragu, who I love, to sit still for a teeth brushing is like...
That's tough.
It's tough.
Yeah, that's like when they go to the vet, they shake. We had a dog growing up, so that part, he does too. Yeah.
You know how to get them to stop doing that? You go to the vet on an ordinary day, and you slip a treat to the vet and say, okay, give this. So you give, then the dog...
It's all about the food.
Right.
Well, you know what? If somebody gave me a donut, I'd go to the vet too.
Right.
Yeah. No question.
Okay, so we also do a segment called The Quick Eight, where I ask you a series of questions, and you just give me the first phrase or the first word that comes to mind.
Okay.
Okay, so who is your celebrity crush?
My celebrity crush used to be Alex Rodriguez, but then with the whole steroid thing, it just totally turned me off. Oh, you know who I like? Joe, he was on, he was in Magic Mike. Joe Montelegro. You know what I'm talking about? He's got like a workout video now. Mm-hmm. I like him because he's really ripped. He's got that Italian look. That's my look, although my husband looks nothing like that. And he's funny.
Yeah.
So that guy is my new celebrity crush. Yeah.
What was your favorite movie?
Moonstruck. Your life's going down the toilet. That's me. Right. That's totally me. I love that movie.
What's your favorite song? Besides the 1979 Bad Girls.
My favorite. I'm loving Blurred Lines these days.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
really
Blurred Lines. Yeah, that's a great song. But you know, we'll keep with the Donna Summer theme. I do love MacArthur's Park, mm-hmm. and I have to admit I've definitely taken the hairbrush and have done the pretending that I can hit that high note. I have a hard singing voice. Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so I love that song, and I like a lot of Holiday. I like some Madonna songs. Vogue.
Right.
Old school.
Who is your favorite superhero?
Batgirl.
Batgirl? Yeah. Loved her.
Yeah, love. Oh, God, I love to wear that outfit. Totally.
What's your favorite curse word?
F. The F word.
F.
Yeah.
The F word.
Yes, I would say.
If you could do one thing all over again, what would it be?
There's many, but there's certainly one relationship in particular that I definitely wouldn't have done. I wouldn't have, that I had a 4-year relationship that I would have, if I had to do it over again, I would have totally taken a pass on that. For sure.
What's your favorite sandwich?
Turkey. Turkey on rye, coleslaw, a little Russian, lettuce, tomato. And if I'm really going to town, some Swiss cheese.
That's great.
And toasting it, with a Dr. Brown cherry soda,
mm-hmm.
a salted pickle.
That's terrific.
That's
with the diabetes, mm-hmm. Pumpernickel bread is the only bread that I can have because mm-hmm. it's the lowest of all mm-hmm. the carb.
Mm-hmm. Pumpernickel is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love pumpernickel.
And I've learned to not only love pumpernickel bread,
uh-huh.
but when I eat it, sometimes I imagine it's a slice of chocolate.
Oh, that's good.
It's because it looks
fresh pumpernickel from the bakery and mm-hmm. have it sliced. Oh, yeah. It's delicious.
I'm all. And the last question: what is a job that you would never want to have?
Anything in a hospital. Mm-hmm. I hate hospitals. I hate the smell. So I never could have been a doctor, or a nurse. Anything, even a hospital administrator. Knowing that I'd have to go to a hospital, that was my place of work. Mm-hmm. Now, separate and apart, I do love to go, unfortunately, to Sloan Kettering when we do the shows in mm-hmm. the patient. That's different. It's funny. When I go there, I don't even think about it because mm-hmm. I really want to, help mm-hmm. those people if I can.
Right.
But if I had to work as my job to go every day, I just couldn't. An emergency room. Oh,
right.
That's what I would say.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming and joining us today.
This went by fast.
It went by fast.
You're very good.
Well over an hour. But I had such a great time talking with you and getting to know you. You can learn more about Ellen Karras at her website, ellencarras.com. And you can find her on Twitter at Greek Chick Comic. Thanks once again.
Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.